I'm going to share something with you, and this is some new material that I'm working up, and you're going to be the first that I get to experiment on related to this. I was asked to talk about the spiritual health of the pastor, and I've worked with that a lot in revitalization. If only a healthy pastor can revitalize a church, only a revitalized healthy pastor can revitalize a church. And so, if you are a pastor who's tired, you can't do this very well. You need to go and get some rest. I'm a big advocate of sabbaticals. We're doing that in our association. I just met with a pastor last week, working with him about putting a sabbatic policy into his church. And he's asked me to come and explain that to the deacons. And if you've been on the field more than 7 years, it's time to take some time off. And the right amount of time generally is about 6 weeks. Longer than 6 weeks, you're just going to drive people crazy. You need to, no, not shorter, but not 3 weeks either. That's just a vacation, an extended vacation. 6 weeks seems to be the magic number. So take that time. And maybe some of you have some vacation time coming. Let me give you some advice about that. The same is true before you go on sabbatical. The week before you go on vacation, cut your schedule back to about 75, about 50%, excuse me. The week before, about 75% of your normal schedule. So you're slowly slowing down before you get to that time of rest, so that when you go on vacation, you're resting from the time you leave. A lot of guys are scrambling, they're working until 8 or 9 o'clock at night trying to get everything done so they can go on vacation the next morning. See how weird that sounds if you just step back and look at it? In the scriptures, you have this amazing story, this amazing narrative about Elijah, and I've spent a whole lot of time dealing with that text, and to me it's one of the most uplifting, encouraging, stressful passages. And by the way, I would argue it might outdo the day of Joshua for the time that was required. If you look at everything that Elijah did on the day that he called down the fire from heaven on Mount Carmel, and all the events that took place before that day ended, it was a very, very long day. But Elijah did a lot of things right. You know the miracles. You've preached through the miracles of Elijah. You know what a phenomenal prophet he was. You also know the New Testament comments about him. He was a man with a nature the same as ours. In other words, he's just like us. Maybe turn that around. We're kind of just like him. We have those same frailties and failures and successes. And so I want to talk about this slippery slide that will happen in revitalization leadership. And so let's just kind of walk through this, and then we'll spend a little time looking at the text maybe. Did you know there's the highest of highs in ministry? Have y'all had some of those? Man, great moments in history. I grew up a wild world of sports, you know, and then there's the agony of defeat. Y'all remember that? And the problem is sometimes that happens on the same day. You may have a record attendance that morning, and the deacons may butcher you that night in deacons meeting. And so you just have the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, and sometimes it occurs in the same day. I actually preached a message, a very hard message, and as people were leaving my church, they go by the pastor and shake the hand and all that. The one guy comes by and he says, I'll never forget this. He said, I'm very disappointed in you. He said, I always appreciated your preaching until this morning. And he said, I just think that what you said was wrong, and I just don't agree with it, and I don't appreciate it. Just want you to know that. And he walked out the door. Next person walked by and said, son, that is the best sermon you have ever preached in your life. And I'm going, diggy, 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 what? You know, two guys in a row giving me exactly the opposite counsel and feedback. And so we as pastors and church leaders go from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, sometimes be back and forth. Most of us are in that lows. By the way, y'all remember the stainless steel slides are out on the playground that are like 1400 degrees in the sun? And do you remember you'd grab a handful of sand before you went up to the top because sand lubricated the process? You remember that? And you'd let the sand, you know, kind of go down, and you'd go down with the sand at like ball bearings and make you go faster. But when you got to the bottom, there was always that puddle of water that you had to navigate. You often went right into it, or you tried to get over it, or you'd spread your legs apart and stop so that you didn't have to traverse that. All these memories start coming back. But the image of a slide, describes the life of Elijah, because man, he did some crazy good things, but maybe he didn't end as well as maybe we think. By the way, did you know you fall from here? No one ever falls off the bottom of a slide. Just remember that. So when you're having the highest of highs and you're doing your best ministry and people are noticing and bragging on you, just remember, you only fall from the highest of highs, not from the low. Nobody falls off the bottom rung, okay? You fall off the top of a ladder. And so let's look at what happens in this slide. And I want you to kind of diagnose yourself as a leader. Maybe some other people, if you have a multi-church, a multi-staff church, maybe you can diagnose these things. You know, there's some people who are tired and they don't know it. Again, those people like your wife who tells you you're grouchy, you're cranky, you're grumpy. You hear those words as buzzwords, okay? That means you're tired. If you have anger problems, often that's a symptom associated with depression. You just need to understand that. Some people are tired. They just don't even know they're tired. This is where you need that deacon or key church leader who said, preacher, are you getting your days off? Or you need to get away. You're telling your staff to be away, but you're not away. I'm going to stand in the gap. You're going to go on vacation. You're going to get some time off. You've got to have that person in your life, because a lot of the pastors I work with are tired and they don't even know it. And you know how I know it? Because one of the things I tell pastors to do is go on a retreat. I'll give you the prescription. I am a doctor. Just not the kind that helps people. Here's the prescription from Dr. Terrible. Go away for 48 hours. Go away for 48 hours alone with no human contact, nobody. Leave your phone off. Don't have internet. Don't have TV. The only thing you should have is your Bible, some legal pads, and pens. And the only thing I want you to do is do a study of the revitalization leadership that you find in the life of Nehemiah in his book. For 48 hours, read it, pray over it, write down what God tells you. For 48 hours, do nothing else. I sent a guy on this vacation. I had the most amazing vacation. He said, I went off and found a cabin in the woods down at this resort. And he said, I took big old ribeyes and I grilled. I ate like a king. It's like, you missed the point, dude. This is not a vacation for you to go away and, you know, eat up. I'm not saying you have to fast, but I am saying don't major on the food. Your job is to read the book, pray, and write down the things that God says. Here's the deal. I have given this offer more than 100 times. Go on that retreat. And if you come back and tell me God didn't do something in your life, I'll pay you back for the cost of your cabin out of my own pocket. I've never had anybody take me up on it. Thank goodness. And yeah, I don't expect I would in this room either, because you know as well as I know that I'm right about this. You're probably tired and you don't even know it. Go on that retreat with God. Just listen to him for 48 hours. You're not going to write sermons. You're not going just, but you're just going to hear from God. Some sermons will flow out of this, I promise you. But what would your life be like if you went away and spent 48 hours alone with just God, not talking to anybody else on planet Earth, just God? It's amazing. Some are tired and they do know it. Okay. I think that's obvious what you're supposed to do. Others are frustrated and they're looking to move. Well, I'm just tired. I can't get these people to listen to me. Nothing's happening. We could be a great church, but we got all these problems. And so they're frustrated and they're ready to move. I'm not always sure that's a very healthy thing. God knows your address. And when he's ready to move you, he will move you. By the way, I didn't plan to go to Crestview, Oklahoma, in Oklahoma City for 28 years. I didn't plan to go there for that long, but I did. Had a guy tell me before I got there, I give you 18 months. He never attended church. He just picked on it from the outside. Stayed there 28 and a half years. I never dreamed I'd go to Western Oklahoma, but God puts the pieces of his chessboard where he wants them and where he can use them most. I'm really glad, because now I get to extend that Panama partnership with Kenny Morris with Western Oklahoma churches. Some are frustrated and looking to quit. I'm just so sick of this. I'm ready to do something else. I know a lot of people who do this. Don't you? We're losing pastors like crazy. 1,700 of them resign every month in America. All the evangelical churches, 1,700 of them resign every month. Some are depressed. Maybe you are, and questioning your calling. Maybe I'm not supposed to be a preacher after all, because I don't seem to be getting any traction, don't seem to be making any difference. Some are looking to do something else. A recent study by the Schaefer Institute said that about 80% of pastors said that they would do it if they could make a living at doing something else. And brothers, what does that say about our calling? Maybe your retreat needs to go and be one of those. Lord, am I called? You call. By the way, the gifts and the callings never go away, according to the book of Romans. You just remember that next time you're thinking about chucking it to the wind. Or you're fearful of losing your job. So many pastors don't know what to do. Second to that are the people who won't do it because it will cost them their job, they think. Potentially cost them their job. Rarely does. If you're doing what is right, you rarely do lose your job for it, but that's the possibility. Some are just fearful that they're not going to be able to provide for their families. If I lose my job, how am I going to pay? How am I going to feed this family? We're going to lose the house. What will we do? And that leads to hopelessness, a hopeless life where life implodes, your ministry implodes, and all these weird things start going through your head, like, okay, now I'll never serve another church. Who's going to want me now? One of my dearest friends is a director of missions in South Texas. He was fired from two of the three churches he pastored. At least he didn't quit. And now he's a director of missions. And he can speak to pastors who have been fired better than anyone I know because he's done it. He's lived it. And so don't be afraid to get fired. If they fire you, remember you're his. You're still in his hand. And that means God's going to put you somewhere else. He's not done with you. He doesn't get finished with his servants. The only way that happens is if you disqualify yourself from ministry. And in that imploding life scenario, when you're there, this is where those temptations to do things you would never do before in your whole life begin to come in. That temptation to get into immorality or pornography or some other illicit crime, those things begin to creep in your life because your attitude is, oh, well, what else is it going to matter? And those temptations get stronger. And a lot of pastors really get into trouble when they're at the very bottom. Just remember this. So let's just explore this amazing passage of scripture. And maybe you got your Bible open. If you have your Gideon Old Testament, would you please join me in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 17? We're just going to kind of quickly go through this, okay? We don't have the time to spend, verse by verse or anything. But in chapter 17 is kind of where this all picks up in the life of Elijah. You remember he's prophesying that it's not going to rain, and it doesn't rain for 3 years. And the New Testament says it actually ended up being 3.5 years before it rained. And then God, you remember, sends him on a little retreat, sends him to the brook Cherith. Remember that? And there he's supposed to be refreshed. Remember, the ravens are supposed to bring him food. By the way, that just boggles my mind because ravens are an unclean animal. What are they going to bring you? Roadkill. I mean, it's just yum, just like mom used to make. Maybe I'll do that in Kentucky. We do it in Oklahoma. It just happens, okay? I'm just saying, eating an unclean food from an unclean animal just doesn't sound appealing, but it's like what God has made holy, who are you to question? And then he would drink from the brook Cherith. But you remember what happened to that brook? It dried up. Shocking, isn't it? He said it wasn't going to rain, then the brook dries up. It's like, it tells me he was there maybe for quite a while. And then when you get over into chapter 18, some really fun stuff starts happening. And he says, go show yourself to Ahab, and then I'll send rain on the face of the earth. So this is where the confrontation begins to happen between Ahab and Elijah. And you remember at Mount Carmel, Elijah asked the people to gather up all the prophets of Baal, 450 of them, and 400 prophets of Asherah. And they went up to the top of Mount Carmel. And it's a peninsula. It's called the Thumb of Aco. It's a little peninsula. It juts out into the Mediterranean. And basically, there's a mountain and down, and there's only one way down, one way out. So he had them all trapped up on the mountain. You know this story, so I'm not going to belabor the story. But you remember, he challenges the false prophets to a duel. Whose God is the real God? And we know that the answer is the one that would answer by fire. And so you remember the prophets of Baal start dancing around the altar that they had erected, and remember they began cutting themselves and they began crying out. And you remember the taunting of Elijah, which is so special to me, because he's saying, are they asleep?
Have they turned aside from the way? You guys understand what that means, right? Is he on the pot? That's what he's saying. And I know that's kind of crude, but he's asking, is he relieving himself? Has he gone on a journey? Is he asleep and needs to awaken? By the way, that was the very belief of Baalism, that Baal died in the winter. That's why all the vegetation died. And then in the spring, he came back awake, and that's when everything turned green. So he's just taunting these false prophets. And then you remember he takes the 12 stones of the altar that had been torn down by the Baalists, and he one for each tribe, and then he builds the altar, and then remember he takes the ox and he cuts it up into pieces, and he dug a trench around it. And you remember they brought 12 bucketfuls of water, and they soaked the altar and the sacrifice and the wood, even so much that it began to drip into the trench, and then he filled up the trench. And he went and he called on the name of the Lord. And you know the rest, don't you? Fire comes down out of heaven. This isn't the first time God did that, by the way. God answers by fire a number of times in the scriptures. You might want to preach a sermon series on that. That's pretty powerful itself. And so it's like, who's the real God now? Well, that kind of answers the question. You would think that would have settled it. Okay, Yahweh God is God. Baal and Asherah are false. And okay, this day we decide and it's going to be over. No, it wasn't over. Elijah had the people gather up the false prophets and take them down in the valley to Kishon. And remember, he had them executed there, 850 of them. It almost reads like Elijah did it, but actually he had the people do it. So you think, okay, now we're done. Now we're done with Baal and false, you know, prophets and false, you know, gods in the nation. Maybe now we'll get back to the Lord. No, it wasn't over. He goes back up on the mountain. There's King Ahab. And he says, you better eat something. You're going to need your strength. So Ahab begins to take meals and drink. And Elijah went all the way up to the top of the mountain with his servant and began to pray. You remember that? Seven times he got down on his face and put his face between his knees and began to pray. Seven times he sent his servant over and look across the water and see if you see anything. Nope, clear blue skies, clear blue skies. Seven times. On that seventh time he says, I see a cloud, a small cloud coming up out of the sea about the size of a man's hand. The way I interpret that is hold your hand out like this and it would have been about that big. So he goes down and tells Ahab something funny. He says, you better get going if you're going to stay ahead of the rain. Sure sounds like rain to me. There's no sound. They would say the sound of rain. In Oklahoma, we say it looks like rain. It looks like rain to me. Ahab gets on his chariot and takes off across the Jezreel Valley to the city of Jezreel, which is 14 miles away from base of Mount Carmel. It is Carmel, by the way. Carmel is a whole different subject I enjoy on occasion. But Carmel and Jezreel, 14 miles away. Ahab's on a chariot. And he said, because it's going to rain, and everybody knew, and there's a great story in Judges chapter 5, where people get stuck in that valley. The mud is gummy. It sticks to your feet and clogs up, and your feet get heavy, and your animals will even get stuck in the mud. Your chariots, they don't have four-wheel drive chariots, so they're going to get stuck in the mud. Everybody's in trouble if you don't get out there ahead of the rain. So 14 miles, by the way, it's a time of the evening offering. When the fire comes down from heaven and you killed a bunch of prophets, told the king, why didn't he kill the king? He learned from David, I will not lift my hand against God's anointed. He could have stopped a lot of it if he just killed the king right there with the false prophets. He didn't. Tells the king, get going. By the way, if you read the story carefully, Elijah beats Ahab to Jezreel. Why? The Bible only says, because the hand of the Lord was upon him. Now, I may not look like a marathoner. Well, that's because I'm not. I can't run across this room without being out of wind. Could you imagine old Elijah girding up his loins and trotting across the Jezreel Valley? He would have had to cross the Kishon River a couple of times as it meanders through the valley. And at the same, and all the while he beats Ahab to Jezreel. When Ahab finally gets to Jezreel, he relates to his wife, sweet little Jezebel, all the things that Elijah had done to the false prophets. Do you remember what Jezebel says back to him? I'm going to make your life like one of these before the end of the day. In other words, you're next. And it says, and this is one of the more perplexing passages in this text, in this narrative. It says, he ran for his life or he was afraid. This is the spiral that often begins the downward way of your life when you begin to live in fear, and it is a real distinct possibility. Afraid to make big moves like you used to. As we get older, we're a lot more cautious, a lot more reticent about stirring up people or causing conflict, because the fight is just not in us. You know the old story about the fight and the dog? It's just not in us, and we're afraid. We live in fear. There's a fun book. I always made my staff read it. It's called Who Moved My Cheese? Have you ever read it?
Yeah.
It's a modern little parable. It's a cute parable. Who Moved My Cheese? You can read it in 10 minutes. It's not a hard book to read. In summary, and I'm going to do a spoiler alert here, it's a story about two little mice and two little men running around in a maze. The cheese is what they have, what they depend on, what they live on, what they eat. Well, as they live there in that maze for a long period of time, the cheese begins to disappear because they're eating it all. And pretty soon they're running out of cheese. And it comes to their realization, hey, maybe we better go find new cheese. And there's some of them that say, no, we like the old cheese. We just want to be like we've always been. But there's not going to be any more cheese. Well, I don't care. I like it just this way. The ones that were wise went off into the maze to find new cheese. Where I'm going with this, there's a sign that they encounter on the wall in the maze. And to me, it's one of the best questions I've ever heard in my life. It's the question of, what would you do if you were not afraid? Man, think about that second. What would you do if you were not afraid? It takes faith to follow God, and whatsoever is not of faith is sin. We're told in Hebrews 11:6. You know that we have to take big leaps of faith. But so often we're just merely cold and calculating and slothful about making decisions because why? We're afraid. You got anybody in your church you're afraid of? You're with friends here. I've been in those worlds. I've pastored before. You know, I'm dealing with a church right now in my association. The treasurer is got some problems with the money. Let me just say it that way. I said, you need to go have a conversation with your treasurer. He said, you don't understand. The treasurer is the big dog in town. He owns half this county. Everybody knows who he is. Nothing happens in this church without his approval. He is the big dog. He was afraid to go address this problem in this church. I understand it. I don't approve. I don't bless that. But I understand it. We can sometimes live in fear of what might happen. By the way, what might happen rarely ever does happen. But we live in fear. Fear of what? Fear of people. Fear the consequences of making big choices. I think more pastors get in trouble because they don't lead than when they do lead. It's not that you're going to make mistakes. Tell them you're going to make mistakes. Tell them, okay, we just proved what doesn't work. Because I've tried about everything as a pastor in, you know, 33 years. I can tell you what doesn't work. Better I can tell you what does work. But don't be afraid to try. Don't be afraid to move forward. And what would you do if you were not afraid in your context? What would you do?
Would you upset the apple cart? Would you address problems? Well, Elijah goes into the spiral downward. What happens to Elijah next? Let's just dialogue for just a second. Remember, he runs away. You remember where he goes? He goes as far south in Israel as you can go, Beersheba. Remember that? And what's happening to him? He is worn slick, isn't he? Because he sleeps a lot in that text. instead of the ravens feeding him, the angels are feeding him sweet cakes. Isn't that an incredible picture? He's tired. He runs away, falls asleep, and angels come and minister to his need. And the angels provide him food. This is where angel food cake comes from.
It's one of the sweetest stories in all the Bible, right? But then you remember he goes, and it must have been some really good cork and high-powered vitamin-type carbohydrate-type food, because he goes for 40 days on the strength of that food. And where does he go? You remember? He goes to Horeb. Another word for Horeb is Sinai. It goes back to where it all started. God gives him certain things he has to do. Anoint a new king of Aram. Anoint a new king of Israel. Because those two things, those two kings are going to fight the common enemy they have. And then I want you to go anoint your successor. And you remember how that happens? He finds Elisha, bald, fat farmer, standing behind a team of oxen. Remember that? It's a great story. But Elijah's life began to spiral downward, and he was not the same prophet that he was on top of the mountain when he's down in the valley. Some people finish really well. Sadly, too many people finish very, very badly. You see where I'm going with this? Anybody can start a marathon. Not everyone can finish a marathon. You have to finish well. Blessed are those who endure to the end. You know, those that endure to the end shall be saved. We have all this language in the Bible about getting to the end. It's not about beginning the journey with Christ. It's about completing it. It's about finishing our course and fighting our fight and doing what God has appointed for us to do as long as he gives us life and breath. And that's why some of the apostles, most of the apostles, met their fate at the hand of an executioner, because they knew that their life was all about service to the king. Today, most pastors are thinking about getting to retirement, and COVID only expedited that process. We did a think tank at Southwestern Seminary, and I was a part of leading that group, and we were predicting what the church was going to look like coming out of COVID, and one of the things we predicted, apparently it looks like it's coming to fruition, we predicted that more pastors would get out of the ministry early. So those who were thinking about serving until they were 70, for example, are now thinking about getting out when they're 60 and doing something else to finish. And I'm serious. The reality of people getting out of ministry is something that alarms me greatly. And I understand the temptation. I understand why it would be advantageous in some people's eyes to go do something else. I'm a director of missions now. Any other directors of missions in the room? We've got one, I don't know. Which is more stressful, director of mission or the local church pastor?
They're both stressful. Yeah.
Not the same stress, though. Let me tell you the cool thing about being a DOM. You get your days off. Yeah, because nobody thinks about the DOM on Friday or Saturday unless they wake up sick and need you to fill in the pulpit. So I get a lot more rest now than I ever did before. Stress level for me is very small. I have a small association. And I'm spread out across four counties. And so I do a lot of drive time, a lot of time to think and pray. And it's really a wonderful experience. But you need to understand, you're in the highest stress job there is. Can't imagine one that's worse than what we do. It is tough. And that's why you guys stay rested. So let's explore for a second. Why did he go from the top of the mountain experience, killing all the false prophets and bringing the people back to Yahweh God in that covenant relationship, to being the prophet who runs away from a girl? Because that's what's happening. He stood toe-to-toe with Ahab on the mountain, but hears that she is coming for his life and runs away. So, this is your time. Explore with me for a second. Why was he afraid? Why did he run away? Looked at a dozen commentaries. I've talked to theologians and scholars, and you know, they kind of fall into a few categories. I bet we can figure out most of them. You had your hand back there. Go ahead. Why do you think that happened?
I think you got tired. I think you got overwhelmed.
Okay. Those are actually kind of two things, aren't they?
Yes.
Tired and overwhelmed. Hey, do you guys understand that overwhelmed experience?
Yeah, every day.
Can you be overwhelmed at what God does?
Yeah.
One of the problems with revitalization is people think it's too big. I can't do this. It takes too long. I can't do this. You know the old proverb about eating an elephant? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Same way with revitalization. You can make some changes in revitalization. You can see pretty much instantaneous results. And some of that's really quick and really good. But some of it takes a long time to kick in. And it takes about 3 years for the changes to become the new DNA. So you can be overwhelmed. Don't be overwhelmed with revitalization. Just do a little at a time. I built a house and we have a septic system and they dump gravel on the lateral fields. And man, I was picking up gravel out of my yard. I was just getting sick of it. I said, no more. I said, now every time I go in the backyard, I'm going to pick up a piece of gravel or two or a small handful. But I'm not going to spend all my time picking up this stupid gravel. You can walk all over my backyard now and you cannot find a piece of gravel. Why? Because I did it a little at a time. Do that with your church. What needs to be worked on today? Who needs to be dealt with on this situation? Who needs to be talked to? What do I need to do today? Think revitalization world. What do I do to revive this church, to get it to listen to the Spirit of God and follow the leadership of the Spirit of God? What do I do to set that sail so that it's ready to catch the wind? Okay? Tired is the number one answer I hear from people. Overwhelmed, another great answer. What else?
She was a very powerful woman, obviously, and her word was the law. And Satan can be very threatening.
Mm-hmm. She had a track record, didn't she?
Yes.
If you go back to chapter 18, you remember, if it wasn't for a faithful prophet by the name of Obadiah who hid 100 prophets in caves, she might have decimated the entire prophet corps in Israel. Of course, at the end of the story, God tells Elijah that I have 7,000 more that he didn't even know about. And God can raise up prophets out of anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, he can raise up a pincher of sycamore figs to be a prophet. He can call a herder of sheep to be a prophet. He can call anybody to be his servant. But I think Elijah took her threat for real, don't you? Yeah.
Yes. I think adding to that might have been that he thought Carmel was going to settle the issue entirely.
Yep. Good point. Good point. And if that didn't do it, killing all those prophets would. Because now they got no mouthpieces. They've been discredited. Now we're calling all the people back. You'd think that all the people would come back, did they?
No.
No, they're Baptists. That's why they don't come back. Go ahead, Timothy.
I believe, too, that even though he had such a close relationship with God, he still felt all alone.
Yeah.
He didn't feel like anybody had his back.
Loneliness is actually one of the five major categories that people have noticed here. It's that you're alone or that you're isolated. Those two words I kind of put together in the same category.
That's right. Isolation is a big issue with me. I mean, I'm just working on sermons. I'm sitting in the church and trying to grind it out, and it's just isolation.
Yep. How far is the nearest church from you? Are you in a small town?
Yeah, so just a block or two.
Okay. You know, I have churches that are 20 miles from the next church out in my association. And you talk about isolation. Yeah. Yeah, buddy. So you can be isolated in the metropolitan area, by the way, because it's lonely being the pastor. You guys understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're surrounded by people and you're lonely. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. I've told my wife the worst thing is being lonely. It's like, you're not lonely. You've got 1,000 friends and you get to go all these crazy places. And, it's like, you don't understand. Most pastors don't have very many people they can be honest with and that they trust enough to be honest with. True?
Yeah.
Don't do that with the people in your church. I just don't think that's a healthy thing. I've never seen that really work out in the long run. Only thing lonely in your pastor is sometimes a DOM.
Yeah.
It's a pretty lonely profession, too. Because nobody says, hey, let's take the DOM and his wife out for dinner tonight. Nobody ever has that thought. Or let's give a pastor appreciation gift to the DOM. That no one ever has that thought either. So it's October coming up, I'm sure you're probably going to get recognized.
piggybacking off what brother said over there, kind of leaning into confrontation, and I don't want to say he was afraid of confrontation because he just killed a bunch of prophets, but do you think ever somebody just gets tired of the confrontation? Like, I'm tired of fighting this fight. I don't want to deal with the headache anymore of whatever.
Of course.
I don't know what category you put that in, but.
No, I think you're on target. Speak some more to that. You're on track here.
You know, you feel, whether it's a conflict with staff member or you're pushing a committee to move something in a new direction, and I'm not speaking personally, I've just seen it in other people, just like, they just feel like they're beating their head against the wall, and you're just like, well, I'm tired. I'm tired of messing with, you know, or even an aggravating project at the house, you're just like, I'm tired of looking at this gravel in my backyard. I just don't want to deal with it anymore.
Yeah. You know, it's another paradox that we actually make more progress by stepping back sometimes than we do by pushing forward. You will get more done if you call a timeout and go on a retreat with God. I mean, you tell your deacons and your staff, your secretary or whatever, that I'm just going to go away for tomorrow and be alone with the Lord. And let them chew you out for that one. I actually officed in a church where they were trying to dock the staff vacation time for doing that. And I had to act as an intermediary between the abusive treasurer and the personnel committee to make sure that didn't happen. There's nothing wrong with going and getting alone with the Lord. Stepping back, quit pushing. Quit trying, start trusting, as the old song goes. And I think you're on target. You know, you want to jump in here?
Well,
saw your hand.
You alluded to this, I think, earlier, but I think that he was disillusioned.
Okay.
I know I'm struggling with that myself.
Speak to it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we had this big crusade, you know, in Harrodsburg. We did not have one single decision from the church. And I was one of the ones that trained the counselors. It was on the executive team. Matter is, we just did not have the lost people there. And you know, you go through all this and you're tired, and you think, wait a minute, am I just beating my head against the wall?
You're on target, buddy. You're right on target.
Get disillusioned with it.
Tell me.
Then I began to doubt. You know, I began to doubt. You know, is all this really true?
Tell me your first name.
I believe it's Tim. I filled out the card, forgot to put the thing on.
Okay. Tim?
Mathis, yeah.
Does it have anything to do with our pride?
I don't know.
I mean, pride is the sin I struggle with most. I may just
be
completely honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, people blow a lot of smoke at me, and, you know, it makes my head grow. And I want to be successful. I'm a hard driver. Ask Kenny. He'll tell you. He's seen me at my best and my worst. When things don't go well, I think it reflects on me because that's my pride. I don't know if that's what you're dealing with.
It's pressure that I can sense sometimes, but it's just like unbelief is so rampant, and we're in a college town, and if you're not a leftist, you know, you're a nobody. And, I've been in my pastorate 34 years if I'm still alive.
Whoa.
December 1st.
You had a sabbatical?
And, oh my goodness, I've had two.
Good.
The first one, and I burned out. And so they let me go away for 6 weeks, and the second one I had pneumonia. So those are not really sabbaticals.
Not really.
They're really treatments. But anyway.
Let me jump in here.
Yeah.
Some fields are tough.
Yeah.
Kenny will attest to this. You can have a field next to another field separated by nothing more than a barbed wire fence, and one field produce anything you put in there, and the other one's sorry ground. It won't produce anything. Am I wrong? We're not as the same quality, and there's no explanation why that is so. There, Rick Warren, whatever your opinions are of him, planted a church
in the richest field in all of America, and it was not by accident. His dad was the BOM next door. A lot of research was done in that area by a guy named Schuller, built the Crystal Cathedral. He walked in, started a home Bible group using a model of a dissertation written by somebody else that worked. Gave him the 4 points of discipleship on the baseball diamond, which we've all seen. If you can't start a church in that environment with your dad next door, $50,000 in your pocket, in an area dying for the gospel, there's something wrong. Of course the church exploded there. And then we plant churches in some areas, and no matter how hard we work that ground, we just don't see the same fruit. The results are in God's hand, brother.
Yeah.
Okay? Your job was to plow the dirt.
I had 3 times the people attending that.
Yeah.
Then COVID about wiped us out.
Oh, COVID.
We had 120 Sunday.
But now we got COVID excuse. Mm-hmm. What happens or doesn't happen in the church is because of COVID.
Yeah.
We got to quit using it as an excuse. Amen. It just is.
Amen.
And it's not nearly the plague that it's made out to be on the news.
That's right.
I mean, in the weeks of COVID, I had churches that shut down. I had churches that were open, not even wearing a mask. And they were hugging each other and kissing on each other. They might as well have been licking each other. I mean, they're just all over each other. It's like crazy how people responded to that. It can be an excuse. Let me back up for a second. Because being afraid kind of came out of something. It began with a threat. Have you ever lived under a threat? Maybe a death threat? Any of you ever had a death threat? I have. I buried a guy in my church who was a 33rd degree Mason. And he asked me, he had cancer. He prepared his memorial before he died. And he asked me, can we do the thing in the church? I said, no. We don't do the Masonic service in the church. What you do with your family out at the cemetery, now that's your business, but I have to guard this pulpit. I guard what comes into this auditorium. He was completely cool with it. We loved each other till his last breath. His son came in and said, what do you mean you're not going to do that? You have any idea how faithful my dad was, how much money he gave to this church, blah, blah, blah. And he said, don't let me catch you outside because I got a 30-06 with a scope. I've lived under the threat. But you know what? Threats can either empower you or they can weaken you. And you have to choose. Okay? I didn't mean to cut you off there, brother, but we got more ground to plow here. So no one has mentioned the number one answer that I hear, and that's depression. That it's just flat out depression. Lots of symptoms, running away. So the desire to isolate,
sleeping
excessively, wanting to die. Remember he cried out, despairing of life, wanting to even die. Kind of like, I shot my shot, I did my thing. I think he thought Carmel was the purpose for his existence. And after that, God would be through with him. Was God through with him? Nope. There's a couple things he has to do. Go anoint some kings and a new prophet, and he has to do that miracle in 2 Kings 2 of dividing the water of the Jordan. Remember that? Another one of those great stories. God wasn't through with him. And you may be thinking God's through with you. He's not. God's not through until he tells you. In fact, I'll say it this way. I don't think God is through with us until we close our eyes in death.
Amen.
I don't ever want to quit preaching. I hope I never have to give up preaching. There may be a day physically I can't do, vocational ministry. That may be the reality, but I believe I'm probably going to preach until the day I die. I thought when I became a DOM, I'd quit preaching. Wrong. Okay. Last Sunday was the first Sunday in months that I haven't preached. Don't know why that happens.
I wonder, sometimes there are things worse than dying, in the ministry. And by that I mean, I wonder if he goes up to kill all his prophets thinking he's going to die in that place, and maybe a little disappointed he didn't. Of course, we don't know that. But, we've gone through some stuff over the summer, some of these same things we're talking about, and we made a change, and it went terribly. You know, and so did all the things that you're supposed to do leading up to change, but you know, when it actually happens, it just didn't work out. And I remember thinking beforehand, you know, man, we're in it now, right? Mm-hmm. This is it. This is one of the first steps to revitalization that we're gonna do. You know, and we're in it. I'm just in it now. And I'm thinking I'm not gonna die on this hill, but you know, this is worth in my mind. You know, you can't continue unless we get serious about some things. Well, you know, Satan attacked in a different way than I ever expected, you know, and it was so much worse than the thing that I expected to happen, you know, because it came in, you know, stuff that came in from the inside and from the outside. You know, I would have rather, you know, in some ways just like I would have rather died back there, yeah. You know, not physically, but you know, I mean, sometimes you go through these things and they're, you know, he just thought, I mean, maybe he would just rather died on that mountain, you know, and then.
I think you're very honest, and I appreciate your honesty about this. I really do. I talk to lots of pastors, and one of the hardest things I do is trying to get them to tell me what's really the problem, you know, and what's your role in that. We're really good at deflecting. That's somebody else's issue. Yes, sir.
I hope I don't say too much here. I've pastored for about 55 years.
Oh,
I'm only 82, and I'm hoping to pastor till I die. I think the great thing would be to die in the pulpit.
It's a little traumatic for your church.
It might need it. But all the
they
things
die along with you.
Yeah, all the things we've talked about. I think one of the problems is we have too much expectation for who we are. Hmm. I pastored a church in Louisville. The first 2.5 years we had over 200 additions. The last 2.5 years we had 15 additions. Okay. And what was the problem? Hmm. Somebody, you know, same preacher,
yeah.
Same doing, but. Because those last 2.5 years didn't meet my expectation. And then we come along with this COVID thing and we shut down like everybody else, but we decide we're going back. We went back, we're running about 95% of our attendance we were before it happened. Our offerings have increased and we're fixing to go into a big renovation project.
Good.
And I believe that it's when we get out of the way and understand there's nothing we as pastors can do. And the Lord tells me all the time, he says, remember Noah and remember Isaiah. We forget that when Isaiah went out to preach, he said, I'm not going to listen to you.
Yeah.
We just hear that
Jeremiah,
send me. Mm-hmm. And then he reminded me, I have one responsibility, preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, and exhort. And if we'll keep preaching the truth, and I do it, and I know some people don't like it, I've been told they don't, but the truth is the truth. It was the day I started pastoring and preaching, and it'll be the day that I die, and it'll be until Jesus comes, and do it, and God will honor it.
Preach on, brother. We just have a second left. Let me share the last few items to think about, and there's some rungs on the failure ladder that you need to be aware of. By the way, hang on your note taking. I have a reason for saying that. I'll show you in a second. I think he made mistakes because he listened to the threats, began to worry about them. Depression, anxiety, maybe he had some mental health issues. Maybe it was that loneliness or isolation. Weariness, spiritual and physical weariness. You ever preach and go home and just exhausted on Sunday morning? Why? Because there's digging a ditch tired, and there's laying it all out there from your heart tired. And I think Elijah was there. And then that crisis of faith, not the crisis of belief like Blackaby talks about, crisis of faith, where he's really beginning to doubt God about what's next for him or what's next for the nation. By the way, I'm going to leave you with this, and we got to be done. I want you to think about something I've been kind of exploring. Have you ever noticed the similarities between Elijah and Peter? I mean, both of these guys had great moments, and then both of them had great failures.
Both of them despaired of life. Both of them went away. What happened to Peter? He went away and wept for denying Christ. I mean, maybe you can make more of that than I can. But I think there's some similarities between great leaders who experience highs, that they're going to go through a similar pattern. Maybe you've been through that pattern.
I don't know.
Appreciate all of you sharing your hearts. Thank you for letting me share mine with you. There's a slide I want to show you right here. This is my website, and if you'll go to churchrevitalizer.com, and if you'll use the magic password of revival with a capital R, then you can unlock about 150 free revitalization resources. And I haven't uploaded this presentation yet, but I'll get it uploaded soon. But all the other materials that I use, because you've got skin in the game, you came to listen to me, I'm going to give those to you for free. And use them however you want. There's some stuff in there if you want to change the names to protect the innocent and to make it fit your setting. Great. You just have it and use it, and may the Lord bless you. I'm going to turn it back to the Lord.